Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everyone. Okay, last time that I spoke, we were studying the Sala Sutta. This is the discourse in the Sutta Nipata about, it's called the dart. And this is concerned with the dart of grief or sorrow that comes from separation which is brought about by death, by the loss of loved ones. And as I expressed my own opinion last time, and I'll do that again today, it seems to me that the sutta is setting a standard which is somewhat too high for most of us to follow, and maybe too difficult for us to follow. It seems to be recommending a state of almost complete equanimity, complete lack of feeling when faced with the death and loss of a loved one. And maybe this is a state not only that we find too high for us to follow, but a state that we can't even approve of, that we find almost morally unacceptable. Since it seems that if we lose a loved one, that it's natural to feel some emotional loss, some feeling of despondency. So how do we reconcile this ancient Buddhist ideal with our natural emotions? My own way of bringing these two together is to postulate that it's natural to feel loss, to feel some sense of loss at the death of a loved one. And if one feels this sense of loss, this feeling of grief, one shouldn't feel that one is falling short of Buddhist ideals. But one should recognize, one should use one's knowledge and understanding of Buddhist principles, the principle of impermanence, the principle of the universality of death, as a theme for reflection to enable one to overcome a clinging to the loss of a loved one. So whereas an ordinary person without an understanding of the Dhamma will continue to hold to the memory of the loved person and always cling to this loss of the loved person and continue to feel a burning sensation of loss, a burning grief, a sense of misery and despair, a person who has an understanding of the Dhamma will feel naturally a grief, some sense of despondency soon after the loved person dies. But then they will apply this understanding of impermanence to overcome that feeling of grief and despondency and accept the loss of the loved person, so that they will easily be able to reconcile themselves to the loss of the loved person and live with that loss of the loved person, so that loss of the loved person will not become a continual cause of misery and despair in their life, but they will be able to regain courage, hope, and a sense of purpose in their life. Okay, so with that preamble, we could continue to look at the words of the sutta. Does everybody have a photocopy of the pages? It's called the dart. Okay, so the text says, now we're picking up at verse 9. You cannot know his path as to where he has come from or where he is going, so it makes no sense to grieve for him. So these verses are giving certain themes for reflection that one can contemplate on in order to overcome the sense of grief. So when a person passes away, one can reflect that one doesn't know where this person is going. You see, if one knows that the person is going to a state of misery, to a state of suffering, then that would be a reason to grieve for him. But now, if this person has done many good deeds, if the person has led a virtuous life, then it seems likely that the person will be going on to a happy state of rebirth, in which case one should have reason to rejoice for that person rather than to sorrow for that person. The reason why one is sorrowing for the person is actually, if you reflect on it, it's a selfish reason, because you're being separated from that person. But maybe that person is going on to a happy state of a happy rebirth, and that person's going to be experiencing a great deal of happiness in their life, in their next life. I've always wondered why Christians grieve when a pious fellow Christian passes away, because they should believe that when this person, the pious Christian, passes away, that they're going to pass on to their next life into the presence of God, and they're going to enjoy the felicity of eternal life in the presence of God. So they should be rejoicing now that this person has come into the eternal presence of God. So it should be no reason for sorrowing. Similarly, for a Buddhist, if another Buddhist passes away, one who's led a good life, who's done a lot of meritorious deeds, then we should be thinking this person is going to be having a happy rebirth, maybe in a heavenly world, at least a happy rebirth in the human world. So we should be either experiencing either equanimity or happiness for this person. At least this is a line of reasoning we could use to help overcome our grief. Then the next verse, I have to say, it's not so clear in the Pali, and I think the translator here is trying to make sense out of this verse. But the way I would understand the Pali a little bit differently, I understand it to be saying, if by weeping one were to get any benefit, then a wise person would also weep or lament. But one who weeps only becomes confused and harms himself. You know, so this is the point of the verse, is that when one weeps and laments over the loss of a loved person, one doesn't gain any benefit. One is not able to bring the loved person back, but one just becomes more and more confused and bewildered. That is what the verse is saying. But again, this is my personal opinion, that normally this grieving and lamenting is a way of releasing a natural emotion over the loss of a loved person. And I think this is a kind of natural biological and emotional response, especially if one loses a loved person with whom one has had a close relationship over many years, or if, for example, a parent should lose a child, or one loses a close friend at an early stage in their life, then I think some degree of grief and lamentation is a quite understandable reaction. Even though, of course, it's not going to bring the loved person back to life or bring any other personal benefit to oneself. But it's a natural way in which the mind and body release that emotion. It's different if it's an old person who's died, who has lived out their full, normal, natural lifespan. Now, in the case, to give my own personal experience, when my own teachers died, my Buddhist teachers in Sri Lanka, I wasn't overwhelmed by grief and lamentation. Of course, my teachers, first the teacher with whom I lived for 12 years, the German monk, Venerable Nyanaponika, we lived together for 12 years. He was 93 years old. He had been almost blind for the last 4 years of his life. His legs were very weak. Otherwise, he had not had any kind of serious illness up to about the last 6 weeks of his life when he started to develop a urinary tract infection. But I knew that he had lived a full lifespan, and he was saying that, I've lived my lifespan, now I've lived more than my full span of life. He said the Buddha lived 80 years, why should I be going on into my 90s? And so when he passed away, actually 2 days before he passed away, 3 days before he passed away, I saw that he was entering into the very last part of his life. So we said our final farewells to each other. And just the very next day, he lost the ability to speak clearly. And then the next 2 days, he was almost in unconscious those last 2 days, till he passed away the third day after. And so I didn't feel grief or lamentation, but right after his death, I felt a sense of like an overwhelming gratitude to him for the very close spiritual friendship that we had for about 20 years. Exactly 20 years. And when my ordination teacher passed away in 1998, he was 1 month short of his 102nd birthday. And though his body previously had been quite strong and healthy and his mind was completely clear, but he had just developed unexpectedly a case of pneumonia, which led to his death. And, I mean, I knew that he had lived a very full, fruitful life as a monk, one of the most distinguished monks in Sri Lanka. And so again, I was like moved with this feeling of gratitude for our close relationship. But it didn't bring any feeling of grief or lamentation. But if somebody very close to me had died who was younger than me, then I would feel, I think I would have felt some grief or lamentation. And I could understand how people feel that way. And I wouldn't lecture that person or give them a sermon saying you shouldn't be feeling grief or lamentation, think that this person is bound to die, that there's bound to be separation. But rather what I would say is that one should recognize that everything is impermanent. Let oneself feel one's appreciation for one's relationship with that person and work through these feelings. And as you work through those feelings, then those feelings will in time fade away. And then cherish the good memories one has of that person. And instead of hanging on to the grief and sorrow that one is feeling. Instead, cherish one's fond recollections of that person and commemorate the good qualities of that person instead of continuing to grieve over the separation from that person. Okay, we continue with the words of the sutta. Verse 12. Yeah, again, these are some of the arguments against grief, that peace of mind cannot come from weeping and wailing. On the contrary, it will lead to more suffering and greater pain. The mourner becomes pale and thin. He is doing violence to himself, and still he cannot keep the dead person alive, so his mourning is pointless. The man or a person who cannot leave his sorrow behind him only travels further into pain. His mourning makes him a slave to sorrow. Then the next verse seems somewhat disconnected from the previous verses. Look at beings who are facing death. Actually, the next line is not well translated. I'll translate directly from the text. Look at these beings who are moving on. People move on in accordance with their karma. Mortals go under the control of death. Beings, when they come under the control of death, tremble here in this world. Okay, then the next verse is very significant. The first line I like to read in Pali, because this line comes in several places in the canon, sometimes in different contexts. Yena yena hi manyanti tito tung hoti anyata. Etadiso vinabhavo pasa lokasa pariyayam. Translated, I translate myself. In whatever way they conceive it or they imagine it, things work out otherwise. Such is this separation. See the way of the world. See the turning of the world. That first two lines, in whatever way they imagine it, in whatever way they conceive it, things turn out otherwise. This points out that we always imagine things to be working out in a particular way. We construct mental pictures of the future, a future course of events, and then we plot out in our minds pictures of the future, whole images of our lives, the lives of others. We elaborate upon these pictures, we construct whole plans, all within our minds. Sometimes these plans become extremely elaborate, extremely detailed, And yet it's all built up in our imagination, all based upon assumptions, presuppositions, that the course of events is going to work out in accordance with our desires, with our expectations. But the second line, tato tang hoti anyata, things work out otherwise. That is, reality doesn't conform to our imaginings, to our expectations. So everything that we build up in our minds, this mental picture, these imaginings, these plans and projections about the future, all of this is subject to collapse. Sometimes one little event that takes place at point X in the future, in the near future, is enough to bring down everything that lies along the trajectory of the future, point Y, Z, Z2, Z3, Z4, everything comes down when one little event is different. We see this at many different levels. Well, put it into national affairs. This present administration launches its war in Iraq. It's going to be a piece of cake, right? Just have to launch the attack, knock Saddam Hussein out of power, and then all of the rest is going to fall into place according with its designs. Nobody expected a war going to continue 1 year, 2 years, 3 years into the future, going to be costing so many, it's not a laughing matter, but so many thousands of U.S. troops, costing so many hundreds and thousands of Iraqi lives. Was it May 2003, George Bush announced, mission accomplished, our job is finished, ready to pack up and go home. That was yena yena hi manyanti. That's how we imagine it to be. But tato tang hoti anyata, things turn out differently. And then here in this verse, that line is applied to the case of separation. Etadiso vinha bhavo pasalokasa pariyayam. This separation. So one has this close relation with the loved one. One has these plans going on into the future. When 10 years into the future or 20 years into the future, maybe, okay, when my son grows up, we'll send him to this college, then he'll go on to graduate school, then he'll get such and such a job, he'll become a doctor, a lawyer. No, not a lawyer, dangerous profession. A college professor. He'll get married to a nice girl. Then we'll have grandchildren, settle nice house, so many plans for the future. But we didn't expect that our son run over by a car or killed in an automobile accident or some sudden illness, fatal illness. And now he's just 16 years old and dead. We have the funeral. Or young man marries young woman. They have their plans for the future. Growing up, together, planning how many children we will have, what we will do together when we are 40 years old, 50, our life together in retirement. And now, just 2 years into the marriage, and the woman has cancer. And then incurable cancer, terminal cancer, and she dies. Separation for the husband. Unexpected. And so often these cases where things turn out otherwise, against our expectations. But this is the way of the world. Things cannot be prevented from working out according to this law of nature. And so, go on to the next verse. And so it says, a man, or actually Manavo could be a human being, may live for 100 years or a little more, but in the end he is separated from his relatives, and he too leaves life in this world. Okay, so the most that one can live, if one lives long, is a little more than 100 years. But even few of us get up to live that much. So, the poem goes on, we can listen and learn from the noble ones. The text says, from Arahato, from the worthy one, the Arahat. Is actually, I think, referring to the Buddha here. That we should give up our grief or lamentation. When he sees that someone has passed away and lived out their life, then one should reflect that he will not be seen by me again. Okay, now comes from some advice on how to put out this fire of grief. When a house is burning, the fire is put out by water. In the same way, the wise man, skillful, learned, and self-reliant, extinguishes sorrow as soon as it arises in him. It is like the wind blowing away a tuft of cotton. The person who is searching for his own happiness should pull out the dart that he has stuck in himself, the arrowhead of grief, the arrowhead of sorrow, of desiring, of despair. Here the text uses these words, several words, paridevang, that's lamentation, pajapang, that is this pajapang is like desiring or craving for what is not possible. And domanasang is dejection, misery. And these are all compared to a dart. That's how the sutta gets its name, a dart, which is piercing the heart. And so the wise person should pull out this dart. And then the person who has removed the dart, this is the last verse, who has no clinging, can attain peace of mind. Such a one has overcome or transcended all sorrow and has passed beyond, is free from all grief, and has attained Nibbana. That is what's translated here, is still. Okay, so these last verses are describing the way one achieves Nibbana. So that a person who has achieved Nibbana is without any sorrow or grief over the death of a loved person. And so it's in the scene where the Buddha passes away, at the scene of the Buddha's parinibbana, it's said that those monks who still had passion, who had not yet freed from the passions, they sorrowed and lamented, and they threw themselves down on the ground, and they cried out, "Too soon has the light of the world been extinguished. Too soon has the Blessed One, the Buddha, passed away." But those who are the arahants, who are freed from all passion, they just observed the passing away of the Buddha and said, "All formations are impermanent. How could it be otherwise?" But I have to say, somehow I imagine that even those who are free from all defilements, so they wouldn't experience sorrow or grief, wouldn't just look on with complete indifference at the passing away of a Buddha, but rather what they would feel or experience would be an emotion that we call Sangvega. Sangvega is a kind of sense of being emotionally moved, but it's not being moved by misery, despair, or despondency. But Sangvega is a kind of deep emotional, a deep emotional state, which is not tinged by sorrow or grief, but it's the emotion in this case which would come from recognizing that even a fully enlightened one is subject to passing away. And I think what can happen is that by using some of these themes that are suggested in the sutta as topics for reflection and contemplation, reflecting how there has to be separation from all who are dear and beloved, using this as a regular theme for contemplation, one can prepare oneself to face the death of loved ones, so that when a loved one, a person who is close to you, passes away, it will not affect you as a shocking experience. It will not come as a traumatic experience, but you'll be able to face the death of a loved one and reconcile oneself to it and accept it. The Buddha recommends 5 subjects of reflection, 5 themes as subjects for daily reflection, he says, for all of my disciples, whether they are monks or nuns, laymen or laywomen. Among these 5 themes for daily reflection, one of them is, I must be parted and separated from all who are dear and beloved to myself. And he says, this topic should be reflected upon regularly, even daily, by everyone. And so when one reflects on this theme regularly, sabehi me pihi, sabehi me pihi, manapehi, vina bhavo, when one reflects on this theme regularly, then if one undergoes sudden separation from a loved one, then one can just bring that theme to mind, and that theme will serve as a kind of protection for the mind, so that the shock of loss subsides and one can reconcile oneself to the loss. One can absorb that shock. The theme functions somewhat like a shock absorber. There's a story told in the Anguttara Nikaya of a king who had a queen, his queen, who was so dear and beloved to himself. The queen's name was Buddha, and she was very dear and beloved to himself. And then one day, suddenly, the queen fell ill, and within a few days, her condition got worse, and then she passed away. The king didn't think he could ever give up the sight of his beloved queen. So what did he do? He didn't want to have the queen cremated or buried. So he had the queen's body put in a kind of cauldron filled with aromatic oils, oils that would preserve the body. And every day he would go to this chamber where he kept the cauldron, and he would look at his queen. And the king would never attend to his affairs of state, never go to the court, never pass judgment. He would just go to this chamber and sit there all day looking at Queen Buddha. And all of his attendants were worried about him, didn't know what to do with him. Then one of his ministers was the follower of the Buddha. And so this minister knew that there was one remedy for the king, but the minister didn't feel that he had the right to preach to the king himself. So he went to a Buddhist monk. The Buddhist monk name was Narada. And he told Venerable Narada about the problem with the king. And he asked Venerable Narada, please come and teach our king how to overcome his grief. And then the Venerable Narada came to the king, and he taught the king this lesson that one must be parted and separated from all who are dear and agreeable to oneself. And then he went through and he elaborated upon this theme and explained that we must be parted and separated from our parents, our uncles, our aunts, then from even from our wife. Wife must be separated from the husband. And when the king heard this discourse from the monk, then he realized, I must be separated from my beloved Queen Buddha. Then finally he came to his senses and realized that he has to give up his queen and return to his normal life. And so then he had his queen cremated, he overcame his grief, and he resumed his duties of exercising the task of kingship. And the name of this discourse, he asked Venerable Narada, what is the name of this discourse that you just gave me? And Venerable Narada said, the name of this discourse is pulling out the dart of sorrow. Okay, so that this be the discourse for this afternoon. Okay, I thank you all for your attention, and may the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all.